Brought to you by Face to Face Games.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
All right, everybody. Yeah. All right, everybody. Welcome to another amazing episode of Hype Club. As always, I'm Matty Studios.
And I'm Tony Batterstone.
And here we are. Modern Masters 3 is dropped. The world has changed. They gave us everything, threw the kitchen sink in, and forgot to throw the kitchen sinks in. But anyways, what an insane, insane release set. So much stuff. I mean, I know a bunch of stuff was coming out last time we were talking, but just seeing the whole set and we got Tarmogoyf again is just wow. I don't even know, man. From a store level, is it insane? Is it just all orders all the time?
It's totally insane. Yeah. The crazy thing has been people just immediately calling and making sure that there are room in our all day drafts and boxes on order and.
Yeah, you know
what?
Oh
man, it's just been it's been just like a regular release only.
You know
we're actually looking for.
You know what? There's a couple things I wanted to note because normally with these sets I'm not interested in the draft format at all. I'm just like whatever. I just want to pick up like new art cards or whatever I want for decks. But shout out to Rogue Deck Builder. He sent me a link to this site called Draftism, and if you want to check it out, the link's in below. It's actually a really cool draft simulator, and it's got Modern Masters 3 on it. So I was just like fooling around between working, doing a couple of like drafts. Wow, this set drafts more like Cube than a regular set to me. I was like going Grixis colors a couple times. I'm like, oh, this is like what I pick in Cube all the time, man. Like it was crazy. So I don't know, man. I think I'm gonna try and come down for draft if like I can find time. This looks fun.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to draft Thursday midnight and then all weekend. So maybe you should see if you're available Sunday when we're also playing Frontier.
Yeah, maybe. That would be dope.
Nudge,
wink, wink. No, totally. I got to try and get into this set because this set looks really cool. Now, I know a lot of people were wondering, like, what is the actual box prices going for in Canada? Because I know a lot of the Americans are going to hear Canadian prices and be like, what? Revolt. But it's a little more expensive up here. But what are they going for now?
Because our prices here in Toronto are set by
the
Big Pop over there in Montreal, I think ours are... They're like $315 after tax, but we're also throwing in a free draft / three free packs with every box purchase.
Well, that's kind of cool. Pick up my box and get a draft.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to encourage people to actually,
draft
the format and play and have fun. But yeah, our box prices are a little bit high compared to some of the other places in the city, but we're also trying to sweeten it with that free draft experience.
That's awesome, man. That's cool. I know. I really do want to try and draft this set because I know in Vegas we had a chance to draft Modern Masters 2 and it was really bad. I think it burned everyone. Everyone at the house was like, this is horrible. No one even wanted to play after we drafted. It was like, these decks are horrible. But yeah, like the depth of this set looks really interesting. So many good cards. So much reprints, though. I wonder if you want to touch briefly on... Do you feel people are looking for the reprints to finish current decks, like in Modern, or is it more like, well, now I can build two decks, or maybe three decks?
The feeling that I'm getting from this is that the players that I've spoken to feel like Wizards is telling them that they can finally try Jund.
Yeah, right? That's you nailed it, man. Jund was the deck that when I came in to trade in my stuff and got Tarmogoyf, that was the deck because I'm like, I'm going to try and build Jund now. And I still only have ever had the two Lilianas I've opened in my original Innistrad boxes when I bought them. So now it's funny because that's exactly what I'm going to do. Get my other two Lilianas and I'm going to play Jund for sure, man.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was like such a rite of passage. Being someone that
you're spoiled, man.
Yeah, I'm super spoiled. So I either, you know, have the cards or have access to the cards with, you know, borrowing from friends or whatever. But if I want to play Jund tomorrow, I can play Jund tomorrow. But I didn't realize that that's actually like a thing.
It is. Know? Yeah.
The people in the modern community, once they have their couple of tier 2 decks or whatever, you know, Skred and Living End, maybe they move on to Escape Shift or some sort of
Merfolk,
Crypto Command Snapcaster variant. But really the pinnacle of deck building in modern, and the accolade that says whether you made it or not is, do you have Jund?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, man. Burn is like your introduction. I always found like when modern is like, well, you want to play a deck, get Burn. You know, do that first. Like that's like your first tier 1 deck you can build or infect.
Yeah, exactly. Boggles, infect, and Burn are sort of like where I would expect somebody who wants to win, but is starting the format.
Yeah. Now, do you find that it's like, because it's weird. A lot of people I've been speaking to is, you know, the people who have large collections like me, like you, like other people are fine with reprints because we're like, hey, I want to play. So it doesn't do anyone any good if we have all the cards and no one has them. So it's, you know, fine. Spread the wealth, right? Like collections go down, but more people can play. Do you find that there is, like, is this set actually achieving that goal of having new players? That's what I'm really curious to see. Like, are new players saying, you know what, I'm going to really try to get in? Or is it just older players upgrading?
I have heard with this set more positive talk about the player base and card availability growing than I have about collection and loss. Overall value going down.
You know what?
It's been a definite positive vibe all around. People are more excited to have more players in the game than they are about what their final resting price of their own Termagoyfs are.
You know what? 100% agree with that, because the one thing I realized too, since the first Modern Masters, which a lot of people look back incorrectly saying, oh, it was great. No, like I was there when Modern Masters came out, it was like, this is amazing, there's reprints. But then when you were smacked with that limited run and the price gouging and modern, like modern cards went up more than anything went down when the first one was reprinted. So it was a very negative, like you wanted the reprints, but at the same time, everything else just kept going up because I guess the player base was growing, right? So this feels like the first time the on the grounds grassroots person who's going to enter the format, it's all positive. Like this really feels exciting. Yeah, Bauble is, I don't know, $1 million now, and Karn is soon going to be the most expensive card in modern, but sure, you know, that's a limited archetype, but there seems to be a lot of decks that you can probably afford. And I know a lot of people were DMing me and sending me emails for the show, and they said, you know, make sure you talk about the most important thing, which is, okay, I'm a new player. I've watched the spoilers. I have half a deck. Maybe, like you said, I've got my Burn deck. I got whatever I want, but now I want to upgrade. When do I do it? And they wanted, like, they're like, make sure you ask Tony, like, when do we buy our singles? So what is like your reaction to being on the ground at the stores? Like, where do we see things bottoming in terms of prices, and what's a good entry point for people?
So I've always been in support of, especially with Face-to-Face Games Toronto being super awesome and always doing like cheap drafts for the whole release weekend of whatever set it is. I've always been a huge fan of draft the set for the weekend that is coming out. So, for example, this weekend when Modern Masters 2017 comes out, we'll be doing $10 a pack, so $30 drafts, and winner gets a free draft. So, if you were already planning on spending $10 a pack to buy a box, $240 or whatever,
You might as well
just get a bunch of drafts in, and who knows, you may get past some foil rare or something because people are in it to win it in the draft. But not only does that give you basically the most affordable way to just crack packs as well as having fun, but it puts you in a position where you're going to see a bunch of other stuff opened. It's going to open up a lot of avenues to like trade and interact with other people and benefit from them also doing the same thing, cracking a bunch of packs and maybe looking for some things. But if you just want the cards, you're just looking for the singles, then give it like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, even a month after the set comes out, when people start to
really crack sort it,
of,
right?
Well, like, yeah, sort of like chill out on the drafting a bit, because it's been drafted, and, you know, not everyone's made of money. And after you spent $300 on 10 drafts, then you're probably gonna take it easy a bit, or you're gonna have a bunch of cards that you've traded in that are now on the market and available. So I would just keep an eye on what the actual activity at your store looks like. Make sure, you know, see if it's still being drafted and people are still opening it like crazy, because if they are, let them do that for you. You don't need to worry about that. The cards will be opened.
Yeah.
And then just keep an eye on trading with other people who are drafting for the fun of it. Like I said, that's a really important key that I think people have sort of gotten away from in the last few years of what I've seen, which is trading with other competitive players. It feels like trading is like a new players thing, that only noobs mm-hmm. trade with each other. And
it's true.
You don't just already have all your cards, then
you're not who professional. Are you? You know what
I
mean? Exactly.
Like,
I
rebuilt my trade binder, and my trade binder personally is like totally ridiculous, because, Maddie, you see my collection.
Yeah,
like,
it's stupid, man.
I know. I open up the first page and there's like two Moxes and a Candelabra, and it's like, this isn't a trade binder. This is like a collection binder, I guess.
Yeah, but it's the Ark of the Covenant, man. You're going to melt people's faces when they see that. They're like, I don't have anything you want.
I actually had somebody, like, when they opened my trade binder, and they were like, this is like that scene in Pulp Fiction where they open up his...
Just glowing.
Where they open up his briefcase, and like, that's like what's glowing in. Yeah. But yeah, like, trade. And this is like a higher value set with people looking for specific cards of a higher value, but you can definitely still trade to get the cards you're looking for.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I know that I've been like paying close attention to is a lot of people have been telling me the best time is 6 to 8 weeks. So 6 to 8 weeks from release is usually the first dip where you get what you want. You may be paying a little bit more of a premium. But again, remember one thing that's really important. If you want to play with your cards, you have to make a choice. And I've done this in the past where if you want to wait for the cheapest price, it's in 10 years. Like, it's just wait till they reprint Modern Masters 2019. Like, but if you want to play, then you have to make a call, right? And you have to say, okay, I'm going to make a call, and it's going to be like, I want to play for the summer, so when's the best time? Another thing that you have to consider as well is for the Modern Masters 2 GP that we had in Vegas, there was a crap ton of product open, literally insane amounts. So when we were there, the vendors were just buying everything at ridiculous prices, right? So the deals that were at that show were really good. Like, I got Dark Confidants for $20 or something a piece, US. And they're like $45 now. I don't think that's going to happen this time, because we don't have that. I think the prices are going to stay a little higher and just be more of a very slow, gradual thing that we see over time. So it's going to come down to a couple of things. If you're Marcel Mint, like me and Tony, that's really important to me. I hate slightly damaged cards. I'm just like, come on, man. You really pay a premium, like, when they're fresh before people have wrecked them. You know, you got to pay a little more for them. If you don't care, whatever, you're good. The other thing, too, is if you're trying to hunt foils, you got to remember the new art foils are going to be extremely hard to find. And you're going to pay an absurd premium, right? So be aware of that. Snapcaster Mage foil is probably going to be nuts, I imagine. Even though the art is polarizing, whatever. I'm sure it looks awesome in paper, because I want to see one. But there's that to consider as well. And, you know, you also should consider a couple of things. First is, if you're playing Modern as a whole, you may not want to be targeting the stuff in Modern Masters 3 right now. As counterintuitive as that sounds, you may want to target the cards that didn't get reprinted first, and maybe quickly pick a couple things up before they skyrocket. Now, I know a lot of things have already gone. Karn's already gone up. Mishra Bauble's gone up. Even silly things like Ancient Stirrings, which I thought was like four. Like, I thought that was a 25-cent card. That's a $5 card. What?
Yep.
Like, what? When did that happen? That's a $20 foil. I was like mind blown. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You know that. And then there's just a lot of stuff that probably was in Modern Masters 2, funny enough. That, you know, if you're building a certain deck, like if you're building Tron, You might want to buy a few things, but I don't know. I think Karn is done. Get your Ugins now, because I guarantee you Ugin will be the face of 2019. So don't forget about that card. There's a lot of cards that are just no one's talking about. It's because everyone's focused on the wrong thing. So those are the things that are going to go up. Modern Masters is going to come down. So for the next 2 months, Modern Masters 3 stuff is going to be dropping. You should, if you want to buy cards right now and have money, go get some other stuff that you need to build your deck and then come back and wait a bit. But again, if you have most of the deck and you're just waiting for Modern Masters pieces, I think Tony's right. Like, get the enjoyment of playing it. You might as well. It's free. Like, I think I'm going to do that this time and just try to play a bit and get into that. So we've told you when to buy, what to buy. Do you think there's anything in Modern Masters 3 specifically that is like a what to buy? Like, this card is something you should pay attention to. And I know for me, it's Liliana. Like, that's the card I need. So that's the card I'm waiting. what price can I get them for, you know? And what will foils look like? That's the other huge thing. We have not seen. No one tweeted what the foiling looks like. I know, right? Like, what? Wizards? Okay, man, someone at Wizards, if you listen to this cast, please pass that information on. Like, it's really important to people. Like, you sell all these expeditions and all these fancy cards, but then you never, like, hey, guys, check it out. And I don't understand. If you know the finish is bad and you don't want to show people, don't make bad finishes. You've had a million sets to know people don't like a certain look. Make the look we want, like, especially when we're paying for a premium set, so...
Yeah, man. I think it would have been a pretty wise decision for Wizards to tweet out what a foil looked like ahead of time.
Yeah, well,
and
why
I think
not?
I think that would have been proof that the foiling and the
is on
look
point.
Of the card is going to be great.
Yep, I agree.
And I think that would have just driven it through the roof. You know?
Also, how silly is it not to like do that for a spoiler? Hey, like, imagine if you spoiled the new art for Snapcaster with a little Vine video. Like, what? Do unique things like that, guys. Come on. Like, man, I don't know.
Like, how about, like, cracking a pack?
Oh.
And it has a foil Snapcaster in it, right?
See? Now, and you give that to the guy who, like, I don't know, the YouTube guy who, like, cracks packs. That would be a great way to spoil a card. Man, we're too good at this. All right, well, okay, so back to the original question. So I'm looking forward to Liliana. That's the card I need to finish Jund. Haha. And I really want to try to get foils, but only if it's reasonable. If the foils are, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know what the price could possibly be on those, but hopefully they're cheaper than they are now. But what's a card you think, you know, that's going to be a good one to pick up soon?
Honestly, it's probably going to be Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Third time, yeah. Man.
Third time's a charm.
Well, fourth time. Plus
his original. The reason I think this is probably going to be a good one is because a lot of people have their Tarmogoyfs. That this is the fourth time that they've been trying to get them. So
raise his hands.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, people like you and I that still don't have our set yet.
Yeah, well, I do. I got mine.
Yeah, this is for us.
Yeah.
So.
You know, it's funny. I was laughing because James Chilcott and Chaz, or not Chaz, what Chaz Andrus from SCG, yeah. they were yakking about stuff. And I think Chilcott is a very finance oriented kind of guy. And if you want to follow the hardcore stuff, he's a good guy to follow. But he was trying to make a point. And I think a lot of people misunderstood what he was trying to say on Twitter. He was talking about the reprint equity that is occurring right now. And what it is we, the people who have collections, are giving up value to have cards reprinted so other people can buy them. That's essentially the economics of what's happening here, which is just economics. You can hate it or love it. It doesn't matter. It's just the facts are what happening, which is fine. I think most people who have collections are fine giving up a little bit of value because I'm like, I want to play. Let's all play, right? But the one thing that's interesting is Tarmogoyf, I paid $250 a piece, so the highest you could possibly pay, I bought in. And, like, it's interesting that knowing if I had known, and of course, if you know, you would make better decisions, but if I had known, hey, Tarmogoyf is going to be reprinted 5 times in a row or whatever, would I, obviously, it's a feel bad to buy them at the wrong time kind of thing. So the next set, like looking forward 2019, 2021, or whatever, if as they keep going, they're eventually going to burn through the reprint equity that's available, right? Like, they threw everything in this set. And while it's awesome and I'm super excited and I love this, I'm just, I wonder in my head, like, we talked about it with this last time. What goes in 2019 that's exciting anymore? Nothing. And if you just reprint everything again like you did in now, you're going to kill the value of cards, which is fine. But it's not fine because there's no excitement then, right? So if my $250 snap Tarmogoyfs are now $25, that's not an exciting card anymore. That's not an exciting rare, right? Or a mythic. So it's interesting because as you build a collection, you see how the economics of it work, and you realize if the sets aren't bringing in new people, that's the balance, right? Like, we pay to have new people come play the format grows, and then everybody gets a sale, in air quotes, and then boom, by the time the next set comes out, everyone, collections have accrued value, and then you do it again.
Okay, where, so think about it this way then, Maddie. Okay. Like, is that where the role that expeditions are supposed to be filling is to create these super exciting more than say $30 cards, and the cards that are supposed to be, you know, four of tournament staples, playable, let's keep them under $25 per card. And I would be more excited to open my fourth $25 Snapcaster than I would to be opening my first $150 Snapcaster.
Oh, you nailed it. And someone had made this bizarre point. They were like, are Modern Master sets just core sets for Modern? And I was like, wow, mind blow. And I'm like,
yeah, holy smokes. Let's just take a minute to let that sink in, everybody.
Right. When you think about if that's the direction, I just wish Wizards was honest. If they said, hey, guys, we're not printing Modern level power cards and Standard. It doesn't work for our formula, which is fine. But what we're going to do is every 2 years, we're going to give you a Modern core set that's just reprints, which is what Modern Masters is, but they sell it as this super premium awesome thing. But if they just said, look, we're going to put the packs at $3.99 and we're going to just make it like a core set. Yeah, I'm actually, like, I am much more interested in that, to keep the format consistently cheaper. And then you can use Standard, I don't know, what, fifth or sixth rarity cards, whatever you want to call them, to give you that ultra pimp level. That's also very interesting. I think they're trying to go to the well too many times and make everything premium. And if you make everything premium, nothing's premium. So that's very interesting, you know. And
so
maybe,
then here's a question then, Maddie. Would you, standard set, would you pay, what is the premium you would pay to have a foil in every pack?
Okay, so you and me are the foil people. I like foils a lot. Too much.
I also like that they're available when other people have them, even if they don't want them.
Agreed. I think a foil in every pack, while I would say instant, why don't we make them all foil? You know, like, why don't we make everything foil? I understand the point of it. It's just this chase thing. So it's like the chase cover in comics. So my worry is if, in standard packs, if they did that, you are taking a bit of equity away from your expedition / masterpiece to cover that. And then you're also eating not necessarily value, but excitement out of the actual mythic regular versions or any version, right? Like, so I don't know. Like, if you want to go that route, then what's exciting about a master set? Nothing. Right, they're just a core set then.
Yeah, but they're the cards that we need to actually play with and to continue to grow the game. Like core sets, if a core set got printed, it would still be exciting, right? Because we would expect there to be rarity biased cards. You know what I mean? Like when they printed the Titans over and over again. Yes, that was like one of their mythic slots. And yes, they totally defined what standard was because that's how standard worked. And that's the core set was a part of standard. But with this sort of parallel modern core set, they could, they don't have to like really worry about the mythics that they put in being biased. So it really is just to put the cards in players' hands to make more people play.
Interesting.
At the cost of the current value and held equity of the collections of cards. But I think long term, if people want to get really realistic about it, it's healthier for the game for there to be more players and more access to the cards than it is for us to have $150 Termagoys.
Oh, no.
$40 Termagoys is better than $150 Termagoys.
Yeah, look, I am 100% in agreement with that. The one thing that I want to put in as well is it's also much safer to run a business if you have 1,000 $20 cards versus 100 $100 cards. So if I have a huge amount of like my business wrapped up in holding these cards that are hard to sell and also very scary to hold because if they get reprinted, I just lose value versus, hey, I got a bunch of $20 cards that I can move all the time. And if they get reprinted, they go down a little bit, but I'm still moving them. So I agree that we need to move away from this lottery ticket / 1% value kind of world that was built where most of the value, most of the excitement is all tied up in this lottery 1% or money ticket. And now I think they're kind of realizing that and they're pushing it down like we saw with Aether Revolt moving power into uncommons. You know, now with Modern Masters, it's like, we're printing everything. We're going nuts. That's good. I like that a lot. Like, I think that's much, much healthier for the environment as a player. Much, much healthier. So if that's the direction we're going, I'm fine with that. Now, I think it was Sam also spoiled on one of his articles there in the Mothership that this isn't the last Modern Master set. In fact, it's not even close. And I know we were speculating that before, like, are they going out with a bang? Well, they're not. They basically are like, we love these sets and we're doing them a lot. So fully expect Eternal Masters 2 next year. Fully expect Modern Masters 4 in 2019 and continuing in perpetuity. So it's just interesting that if you're looking, while you can be excited right now for new art Snapcasters and all, like, you know, you're in the hype cycle, you know, look on the horizon, man. It's not stopping. So that's good. The general trend will be reprints will keep everything a lot, you know, I think it would just crush a lot of the higher end stuff, which is good. It allows the format to, or formats in general to grow. So all eternal formats, this is good. It's going to allow people to come in. There's going to be, you know, points like dual lands. Too bad, dude. Reserve list. That's a choke point. There's nothing. That's where all the money's going to go. And maybe that's also a good thing. I don't know. Right? Allow all those people that want to treat it like it's a 401k. Boom. Go over there. And then, you know, everybody who was speculating in modern, get out and leave it for the players, which is interesting, you know, because that's kind of like what we were attracted to about Frontier, which was there wasn't a lot of speculation in it. And it was just about playing awesome, fun stuff. So if modern goes in that direction, I think that's great.
Yeah, I actually really like the concept of there being, you know, a tiered eternal system.
So do I.
Format. I think that's really cool. Like, you have sort of your tiered standard system where you have draft, sealed, and standard, which are all like basically high level viable tournament formats. You know, you'll be playing like sealed PBDQs and stuff like that. Sealed RPDQs to like get onto the Pro Tour as well as drafts. But then when you move into like the Eternal formats, you have Frontier, Modern, and Legacy, and those are just different versions of the same style of game, which is a game made for the players and the people who want to play with their cards in whatever format. And then you have your high-end collector formats like, you know, 93, 94, and Vintage and things like that. For, like you said, the people that are parking their money in cardboard like it's 401ks.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also just like, it's a video game. Like, if you treat Magic like a giant, giant, long-term, 10-year video game, you need a boss, right? What's the final boss? Well, the final boss is like a full set of power. You know, so while a lot of people are like, I just want to reprint everything, including the reserve list, into the ground, man, I've seen both sides of this argument over so long, and I don't even know there's an answer. I just know that there's a cost and a benefit for each one. And sometimes the cost to achieve one of those things is a lot higher than you think. So, you know, while you may get a small benefit, you're going to pay a big cost, or someone's going to pay the cost, right? It could be those high-end collectors, right? Maybe it's us who pay the cost because people don't play the form anymore, because what's the point in chasing it? Who knows, right? So it's interesting. It's nothing that's going to change. It's going to always be there, and, you know, we'll see how things go. But let's jump quickly back to, like, Modern Masters, because that's what's hot right now. What are the things that you're upgrading in your collection? I know for me, like I said, I want to get my Lilianas. I really don't have a use for Ranger of Eos, but the art is so good. And I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to pick up a playset of that card just because that art is gorgeous. And maybe he goes in something one day. My white human deck, who knows? But that art is just beautiful. My goodness, that's gorgeous. So I wanted to get that. And then I think I would really like to, because I know I finally, after a long time, I got my foil fetch lands from cons. I don't even know if I should attempt this, but I'm curious. If there is a foil in every pack, what I noticed is, like, the foil multiplier is a lot lower for Modern Master sets, right? So maybe foils are going to actually be achievable for fetch lands out of this set. I don't know, man. But that's like my super high-end goal, but I'm not sure if they're going to come down enough to do it.
Well, I mean, even at, let's say, $150 for a foil Scalding Tarn, which is still much more affordable than they currently are or have been for a long time.
Yeah.
That's still, like, you know, a $1,000 investment for your set of foil fetches. Oh, but then you'd be done. Then you'd have them.
I'm hoping 100. I'm hoping 100 Canadian. I'm hoping 100 Canadian, but we'll see. I know it'll be one of those chase things that, like, you know, there will be a window, you'll get it, and if you don't, you know. I mean, I look at it this way. The people who bought the Expedition versions, like, that was the pimp one for them. So that still, to me, is the pimpest version. I don't personally like them, but that's what most people agree is, like, if you're going to pimp, that's what you're pimping to. So hopefully, like, the foil regular versions are, like, people are like, meh, it's just a minor upgrade. But for me, that's what I want. So, I don't know. I'm going to risk it, and maybe we see where we go with those. But That out of the whole thing, like, it's interesting to see someone who has a bunch of decks, what I'm excited about versus someone else who is like, I want to build the whole thing, you know? Like, Jund is in there, and, oh man, the new Death Shadow deck is basically in there. The whole deck is in there. I don't know what else you would need. This is like a few minor cards. Get your Blooming Marshes now, man.
Right? No, like, this is pretty exciting for me to actually be on the outside of. I don't need or particularly want any of these cards.
Really?
But I still want to interact with them, and I still want to draft, and I still want to open, I still want to play with them. So my goal is to sort of flip these into, okay, I want to put in enough money to satisfy, A, my addiction, which is very important, but B, have enough fun in the pre-built-in limited process that maybe I can just wash a couple $100 coming into Amonkhet and then pre-order my common uncommon playset.
Yeah,
that's sort of my goal from this set. They're really, Maddie, there really isn't anything from this set that I'm personally looking for my collection that I need. Because the cards that I play in Modern specifically come through Frontier. So, I mean, I have, you know, the Black-Green Terminators deck built.
Yep.
So most of those cards came through Frontier. I have a set of Shocklands already. I just kept those. I already have Blood Moons from 93-94. So that wasn't something that was, like, a super need, but it is a card that I play in my Modern, like, pool of decks that I play is Blood Moon. So, Snapcasters, I guess. I'd be pretty happy to have a set of Snapcasters. Cavern of Souls looks pretty cool.
Cavern of Souls is another one. I can't tell if that artwork, because it's so dark, what's that going to look like? You know, like,
I know, in foil. I know. So that's another one. And then one thing I did want to talk to you about is, did you remember seeing the alternate art Voice of Resurgence that was up for a little while?
I did. That was really, but I think that was fake, right? That was proven fake.
I guess it had to have been because I saved it and then disappeared and you can't find it anywhere else on the internet.
I think that was Dave Innistrad again. God damn him. He got me with that damn splitter twin. Oh, he totally got me with that. But I think that was from World of Warcraft artwork of some like.
It had to have been.
Because like, honestly, I like the old voice artwork a lot. But one thing that I want to talk about is like, where's the new artwork? Yeah, there's like Snap and there's Ranger of Eos and there's a few other ones. But for me personally, I was like, where's all the big cards? Like the big ones. Like where was the new Death Shadow art? Where was, you know, yeah, you got Goblin Guide, but I would have thought there would have been a lot more new art in the set. And someone made an interesting comment, which is observing people who have been in the format, what they're excited about is different than other people. So the comment that was made was, well, every time you change the artwork, it's confusing for players because they don't know what artwork that is, right? Where, yes, if you only had one artwork at any time, no matter how many times you reprinted it, the game state is very obvious. You're like, oh, I know that art. That's that card. While I agree with that in some stance, I also agree with making things exciting, especially like, look at us. Like, what's got, the first question was, what's got new art? And, oh, nothing, I'm interested. Okay, I'm not interested. So I'm going to buy a set of Ranger of Eos. I don't need it. But because the art is good, I am. So I find that they struck the wrong tone this time for the art. I think that they needed more new art, and they needed more new art on staples. Like a new art on Liliana, yes, I understand it's the card of the set, which was, you know, oh my god, how do you change it? But they did it with Tarmogoyf, and it was a gangbusters killer. Like, that was phenomenal. I think they should have done it with Liliana. I really do. I think a new...
Yeah.
You know,
so it's important to note that when watching coverage, having one art is pretty important.
Yes,
all things, you know, yep. That's,
you're right,
and I'm trying to be favorable with this statement here, but as someone who pays attention to this game more than a little bit, I think that we as a player base are completely capable of handling multiple arts across high end. Marquee cards, for example, the way they do it in Pokemon, if you've ever opened a bunch of Pokemon packs, is they have the regular version, then they have the holo rare, which is the frame and border foil, then they have the reverse holo, which is just the picture but no frame and border, so two versions, then they have the holo foil rare, and those are all the same art with different foiling processes. That's cool, you know, you can get your different levels of pimpness. But then the full art foil rare has different art. So it's the same card, four different versions of it in one set, three of them having the same art, one of them having different art. So that's like saying that your foil Snapcaster Mage is also full art.
Yeah, I mean, look, Pokemon Kajudo and all those cards, they go a little far for me in terms of like the crazy effects on the card, but I do like the idea of if the choke point on it is we want the art to be the same because it's recognizable, then how awesome would it be to just be like, fine, regular Snapcaster is the regular version, and then it's the foil regular version, and then you just do a full art version and a full art foil version so that it's the same art. So if you saw the art on the table, you know it's Snapcaster Mage, but it's full art. I love that idea. But like with reprint sets especially, like for Standard, I think that's a great idea. If you wanted to introduce the next level, like they're going to burn out on Masterpieces in a couple of years. It's just going to not be exciting anymore. But hopefully what they do with them is they do something like that, where they say, okay, fine, we'll have alternate art or regular art, full arts. You know, we'll try that out. But for Master sets, really, for me personally, it's really important to personalize my deck choice. Like I like full art promo lightning bolts. I don't like anything else. Like, that's what I like. I like my full art cryptic, you know, cryptic commands. No text. Like, I like that. Yes, it's hard for other people, but I know all the modes. I know what I'm doing. So I think that it's important for them to throw a couple more things out there like that allow people to personalize their choices. And I think that's just really important in Magic. It's like, look at lands. Lands alone are the epitome of personalization. So let's talk a bit about the mocks, because I don't know if you saw that or not.
I did.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Let's start off there. So the mocks, for me, it's on par with what Worlds and I think it's more important than the Pro Tour. The amount of money they were giving away was shocking. I couldn't believe it. And how limited and high profile it was. And a lot of people were like, the Mox is on. What the hell? Wizards, for some reason, they do things that just mind boggle normal people. Because you're like, you have this great event and you don't promote it. No one knew it was on. And then when I get there, I see this incredible new intro and bumper animation and openings. And I'm like, holy cow, this is like high end. This is amazing. This looks great. And then we cut to a camera and I see Reed Duke in his bathroom, like doing coverage from, I don't know, a room in his house while someone's cooking dinner. And I was like, what the hell? Like, yeah. Kudos, amazing choice on, you know, Patrick Sullivan, best caster, hands down. You know, Dave Williams, I even think, did a great job. Reed Duke, great, you know, great personalities. But what happened? What are you guys doing, man? And personally, okay, I don't care to see the caster's face. I really don't. You know what? If you wanted to cast in your kitchen, that's fine. Just don't put your face on camera. Like, I don't need to see it during the match. Focus on the cards, man. You know?
Yeah, I think that was not like a pet peeve of mine, but something that I noticed right away where they put a lot of work into showing that the casters were real people and that they existed. And those casters did not put an equal amount of work into making sure that their setting was professional.
Yeah, I don't know what happens there. I mean, it reminds me of, like I was saying in the pre-show, many times a client will come to us and they'll be like, we want the best. And we're like, the best? And they're like, yeah, the best. And we're like, okay, the best. And we start making it and they're like, this is unbelievable. And we're like, isn't it? It's totally awesome. And then halfway through, they're like, what is this costing? And we're like, a lot of money. And they're like, whoa, can we slow down a bit? Can we make everything not cost a lot? It's not going to match. And this looks like the same. They're like, hey, do all this awesome stuff. And then like, oh, we have no money. So Reed, just Skype in. You know, like, it was weird. To me, fly people in or, I don't know, send them a booth backdrop or, you know, even like Goldfish said, like, have some professional headsets. How about that? You know, what does that cost?
Yeah. Hey, Maddie, you know how.
Like, hey, I'm speaking into an Apple crate with some bed foam in it, so I can't. I'm not on a high horse here, but.
Yeah, but you sound good.
Yeah, I try. We're gonna get you a box too, but I just feel like it was very bizarre that they want to be an e-sport, yet they don't put the effort into being an e-sport. You know,
yeah, if they had taken $16,000 out of the prize pool and made it $100,000 instead of $116,000.
Yeah, really, right?
They could have, you know, sent each caster $1,000 worth of stuff and $1,000 to do it, and they still have $1,000 left over.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I understand, you know, why they do it. It feels like it's a legacy thing that they've brought in. They're like, well, the Mox existed before, and it is what it is. It's just, to me, it's funny. You know, a couple of the rumors going around were like they couldn't even do Modern and Legacy because of the glitches in the client, which, come on, man. Come on. Like, the sideboard bug alone was driving me crazy. I know I can't stand it. Where you go to move a card, and it duplicates it, and then you drag it, but you've already dragged it, but it's not visibly showing it, so it looks like there's two cards left, and you're like, why can't I move this card? Things like that actually happened on stream, and it's just like, wow. You know, save, like you said, save 16 grand and pay a developer to work weekends. You know, like, come on, guys. Let's get 2017, man. It's 2017. Whatever is going on with Magic Digital Next and your whole new umbrella of things, for me, the Mox should be on par with Worlds, right? They should be 6 months apart. They should be equal quality in terms of presentation level, and it should be equal marketing budget. So you market the hell out of Worlds. No one even knew that the Mox was on. Like, there was like 4,000 or 5,000 people. That was the most that I saw on at any one time, which I was like shocked. But then when I watched it for a couple hours, I was like, oh, I know why. You know, the other thing too is I don't know how to fix this problem, but watching standard matches over and over and over again is not exciting. I don't know how you fix that. You know, last time we talked about it, like, people voted in the poll, like, what's a healthy format? And people are like, most people are like, it's over 5 decks. It's not 3 decks. 3 decks is not healthy. And whether it's healthy or not, you know, to a pro player, I think it's different to say, is it exciting to watch? And the answer is no, it's just not. Like, I by the end of it, I'm like, it's again, it's like the Pro Tour. I'm like, I don't want to watch Marta vehicles, man. I really don't. Like, you know, it's really exciting, you know, watching Raptor kick ass. That was really cool. Like, that storyline was neat. But watching him play 9 matches, I don't know. It got a little bit like, yeah, whatever. So that could be fixed with showing more formats, with showing different decks in formats. We could do it. It's all there. Your game is great. It has depth. I don't know why we don't show it off more. But I don't know. What did you think of the mock overall? Do you like it? Was it hitting the note for you?
So,
yeah, right. You sigh because you're like, I don't know what to say.
So I don't really watch Magic Online content because I don't play Magic Online. That's okay. Not a medium that makes me interested in Magic. It's not the way that I want to consume or be a part of Magic. But I understand its importance. So I'm on the sort of the same page where people that I talked to didn't even really know that this was going on, and the people that knew that it was going on didn't really understand the gravity of the situation of the Magic Online Championship Series. Like, it and that has to do with, you know, marketing and promotion and things like that. But to me, it just didn't come across as like a high level premier event, and mm-hmm. and I wasn't really excited to see it, and I wasn't really interested in what was going on. Now, I did go back and I did watch it all, so I could have this conversation with you honestly and tell you what I thought. and again, like the production quality when it came to the actual quality of the commentators was just like unbearable. Like, it was just completely unacceptable to have a 6-figure tournament where the 7 commentators or whatever
are Skyping it, essentially.
Are Skyping it, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, that's, come on. Well, Zencastr, at least. Like, come on. Like, get everyone on the same page, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think the one thing, the takeaway that I loved, that I think was really good, was having 2 pros in the booth. I know I've said this before, but
it was so good.
What I really want, and I know a lot of the pros and a couple of the people that like watch a lot of coverage all agreed, was having like Patrick Sullivan in the booth with anyone is great. But having him in the booth with someone who's also a pro is just mind-blowingly interesting, because they're talking about things that are so important to understand how to play Magic. They're telling you about potential play lines, about the logic behind a play line, which you don't get even on Pro Tour. You don't get that. You don't get to hear, here's why he did it, because he's thinking this, and he could be witnessing this based on the cards he's seen, and he's exploring this direction. But at the same time, they're saying, he's doing this, but you know what? We know the real information, so this is the correct play. Let's see if he does it. And very rarely does that kind of in-depth stuff get talked about, where that, to me, is professional level. That is what we need more of, and we need less of promotional, funny stuff. You know, it's a balance. But when the coverage is on, when the top 8 is on, you know, when the chips are down, this is the story of the player they like to promote. You need that. So I'm not sure if Patrick Sullivan is working on both sides of the fence now, but I hope he is, and I would pay him $1 million to to just do every Pro Tour ever, because he's awesome, man.
Yeah. Totally agree. He's just the high nut.
He is. He's just the best. Now let's talk about one thing that was, I know we touched on a few episodes ago because we're hitting close to our mark here, but let's talk about an interesting new way to organize and like house cards. And really it comes down to the good old teamer box that Todd Anderson kind of talked about, where he's like, you know, I have a bunch of cards, they're in these colors, I bring it everywhere I go, because I don't know what build I'm playing at this tournament, et cetera, et cetera. And when you're building a collection, I found that's actually really helpful, because, for instance, I have like a Grixis box where I like to play this style of cards, and there's 50 cards, I think, that go in and out depending on the metagame. And it's just a really great way to just say, hey, here's my Grixis box, or here's your Teamer box or Jeskai box. And you can be like, hey, as cards come out, you can buy your cards, sleeve them, have them ready to go. And then at a moment notice, you can show up and be like, ooh, the metagame is all about artifacts. Okay, sideboard like this. This is going to be my deck for the tournament. Or, you know, you're showing up at an FNM before you register your deck. Like, that's a really cool way to do it. And it also is really interesting to just keep your stuff organized because, at least for me, as you get more and more cards, you put things away in odd places and you're like, man, I know I have a playset of this somewhere, but I don't know where it is now, you know? And I'm like, ugh. That's one thing I still, with paper, I find it hard to figure out how to organize my stuff, even though I'm an organized person. I don't know. I mean, you've got, you got the format box, which is the ultimate level.
I mean, I'm still not very good at keeping my toys put away where they're supposed to, and I'm about to reevaluate the system because it's starting to become a little unmanageable. But
format's too big now.
We're getting there. 11 sets in, and it's already game over. Just imagine what the modern box would have looked like.
Oh no, don't even. It's impossible to keep the modern box. It just is. All right. Well, you know what? The one thing I did want to end the show on, which was really interesting, is Mauro on Blogatog there was doing his polls because he loves polls. And he was talking about the best mechanic of all time, the favorite mechanic. And it turned out it's Full Art Lands, which I don't understand. That's actually not a mechanic, but sure, Mauro, whatever. So it's just really interesting that he acknowledged that it's the most popular by a very, very wide margin. So hopefully he starts to realize that this is not a mechanic and it's a game thing and it should just be from now on. So like we talked about last episodes, I think they're starting to sprinkle full arts in all the time. And why I mentioned that is earlier we were talking about like chase versions of cards. It'd be really cool to just sprinkle in a few full arts as well, you know, like maybe Nicol Bolas in the next set, full art Nicol Bolas, and don't tell anyone. Like what?
Oh, I think, man. Talk dirty to me.
Right? Like, things like that get me really excited versus, like, a masterpiece kind of thing. And I don't know why. Maybe that is what a masterpiece is, but it's just the way it's done isn't really what I was hoping. It's a little too far geeked out on. But just give me the full art, man. Like, for the people that appreciate the art especially, like, we have very few things that we can go to, you know? So, I don't know. But full art for me is... it is just the best. This game, it's so beautiful, and I feel what 2x3 inches is just too small to appreciate it sometimes.
It's all
I need 3x whatever. 3x2. I need it landscape or whatever.
Yo, that Sierra Visions that Proxy Guy made, landscape.
Oh,
Jingy Taxes with the Phyrexian.
Yeah, that's insane. On it. And then now I can't remember the guy's name. I can't even remember the guy's name that animated it. Spooky as all hell, man. That's just not cool. But
that's it. That's what Magic could look like, just so you know. Just so everyone at home knows, that's what Magic Digital Next could look like.
And that's what, you know what? That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, that's really interesting to think if the cards weren't necessarily like super animated, like jumping out of the frame, but they were just subtly animated like that. I think that's really cool. And that's really possible in terms of an asset management thing. Because you're just taking the current assets and you're just after effectsing, parallaxing, and 3D stuff that's, you know.
Easy.
Well, it's not easy. It's just you're not you're not adding.
It's easy. You heard Maddie say it. Yeah. It's easy.
It is doable for a production flow of 200 cards a set. 100% it's doable. Right. Custom animations of cards actually animated in 3D meshes, no. But that is. So, hey, that's cool. I think that would be really cool, man. Really, really cool.
We broke it.
Yeah, we broke it. It's done, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, we are like over again, as always, because we've never once hit our 45-minute mark. But we're going to close the show on a few things we wanted to make sure everyone understands. Hype Club t-shirts are actually printed, and they are moving out. So American orders, you guys should be getting them any day now. Huge shout out to Arizuka, who's handling all that for us. He is amazing. Make sure you thank him on Twitter. So American orders are going out. The reason
sweet pictures of yourself.
Yeah, please.
Changing. Please.
Yeah, well, don't hashtag send hype. Look, of course we want to see the shirts because we haven't even touched them yet. But the reason we did this was we got them printed in the States. So it was easier just to have him. He live locally and we can send those orders out faster. But all the Canadian international orders are coming to me first. So, you guys, I'm sorry. You got to wait a bit. So, they're going to come to me. And then as soon as I get them, boom, we're shipping everything out. So, stay tuned. It's all coming. It's all awesome. I'm so excited. Oh my goodness. I can't even wait, man. Stickers came in as well, so we're gonna find a way to do that. Again, remember, I'm seeing a couple of comments in the comments below on each episodes. We're picking one. So next episode we're gonna be 10 episodes. We're gonna pick a few comments over the last couple episodes. And we're going to send you guys out some stickers, man, for commenting. So
the stickers are so sweet. I'm so, so jacked up for them.
I'll drop by. We'll put some out in the face cabinet or somewhere. We'll stick them in random secret areas, see if we can find them.
Yeah, we definitely have to put one on the front door.
Oh, for sure, dude. For sure. Yeah. If I'm allowed to, I'll plaster Pizza Hut outside.
Yeah, you will.
All right, everybody. Hype out.
Hype out.
Hype out.
Okay, I got to tell you about it. Kidding you, Maddie. The morning I woke up after spoilers and you had messaged me that Splinter Coom was unbanned.
Dude, I got trolled. We could talk about that. I got trolled so hard. You know what makes me angry?
Man.
You know,
I woke up in a fever and I saw that and I had to like check all my sources. I didn't even have my glasses on yet. And I was like, that feeling, I'll never forget that
feeling. Dude, my heart
was inside me.
Damn you, Dave Innistrad. I hate that man. He totally screwed me over, man. He didn't just put the card. He put it inside like a blog article. So I see like a screenshot of an article, because sometimes I check to see if the articles come up early, and it's like, oh, by the way, we're unbanning Splinter Coom with new art, and I'm like, oh my god, this makes so much sense. Like, I'm like, they're doing it. It's insane. And my heart was jumping through my chest. I'm like, are you kidding? And I even went to the closet. I got my old binder. And I'm like, Splinter Coom are on the page with my Gataxian Pros. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to play these. And then, like, literally not 15 minutes later, I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you. Chaz got burned too, so.
Yeah, I got burned pretty hard, so.
I was like probably 5 minutes away from buying foil Splinter Twins at that point. If they didn't tell me, I'd be like, I'm buying a set.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. But whatever, it happens.